Our next case then will be number 06-2114. Ejiansa against Gonzalez. Mr. Armbrecht and Ms. Wong.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Let's let counsel get situated. Mr. Armbrecht.
Please, the court. My name is Matthew Armbrecht, and I represent the petitioner in this matter, Jonathan Herdiencia. Mr. Herdiencia respectfully requests that this court remand this matter to the fact finder below so that he may have a meaningful opportunity to be heard. This is a very important question that we're presenting to this panel. And within the question of whether he's had a meaningful opportunity to be heard is a question of whether an immigration judge is required to follow the regulations that were created in order to help protect the due process rights of aliens in the immigration court.
Now, the government raises a number of points that it believes are beyond this court's jurisdiction at this stage of the game, including the fact that because he didn't apply for asylum within 1 year of his arrival in this country and because the immigration judge found that extraordinary circumstances did not exist, this case has to be at most about withholding of removal and torture. So that's one big point. I suppose the procedural point is how clearly did this issue get presented to the board in terms of failure to follow regulations?
Yes, Your Honor. To address the issue of the one-year filing deadline, my understanding that does not preclude this court from reviewing legal questions and constitutional issues.
Well, we have said, though, I mean, the one-year part of it's obvious, right? He didn't file until more than a year. So even if we were theoretically to review it, but we've said in earlier cases that the discretionary call as to whether extraordinary circumstances exist isn't a question of law, federal regulation, or anything else. It's a discretionary call by the immigration judge, and we have in prior cases said we don't touch that. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not here about anything. I mean, the withholding of removal point is still a valid point, although there's a more stringent standard on that.
Well, I agree, Your Honor. It is true that is a discretionary question, and I'm not arguing today that that this court can review the immigration judge's discretion in that matter.
So the asylum claim is off the table. We're focusing on whether the events that happened to Mr. Herdiencia would, in a hearing that met the procedural standards that you're arguing were not met here, might have justified relief.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I think importantly, even if that's taken off the table, that doesn't prevent, like you mentioned, there's withholding of removal in the Convention Against Torture claims, and he needs to have an opportunity to present his case to the immigration judge. So
he never really, I mean, you have not explained, I guess, what his case would have been if the judge had handled the hearing the way you think it should have been handled. What evidence was he going to present of events particular to him, either relating to his Christianity or relating to his Chinese?
Well, Your Honor, if we look at the transcripts of the hearing, certainly there are very few. There's very little testimony.
Oh, I understand that. And you're saying, gee, if this had only been handled right, if he'd been properly advised of his right to counsel, which I think you're correct, at the Chicago end, the immigration judge seems to think things that had happened, unclear whether he thinks they happened in Chicago or they happened in Los Angeles, but I guess it does seem to be pretty clear that nobody ever gave him a list of organizations in the Chicago area to whom he that said, in order to show us that that mattered, usually you would expect somebody to say, well, you know, had he only had the chance, here's what he would have told us about. And I don't see that.
Well, Your Honor, he was not merely a Christian. He was an ordained minister. Frankly, I don't know all of the facts that could have come out in his testimony that would have been brought out if he had had an attorney, that would have been brought out if he had been better prepared. In Los Angeles, there was suggestion that he had witnesses that he was going to bring to the hearing, so there would have been corroboration as to what his experiences were. I agree that in the Chicago courtroom, there was very little said by him about what specifically happened to him. But I thought it was very interesting that after the immigration judge had already decided against him and told him, Mr. Harity, and see, is there anything else you want to present? You know, finally giving him his opportunity to present his case, he made an interesting point that even though the government of Indonesia may not have been attacking me, I was still attacked. And that's an important issue in immigration law that could have been brought out better, is that the government was unable or unwilling to control the attacks by the Muslims on Christians in general, and more specifically around Mr. Harity and Sia, and maybe even directly against Mr. Harity and Sia.
So this is all based on State Department reports, isn't it? These are generalities about conditions in Indonesia.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why I thought it was important. I tried in my brief to go into some detail on the facts, to show the contradictions in some of the reports, and to show that where the State Department is on the one hand saying, well, you know, it's not an Islamic state. However, you know, it states facts that contradict whether in fact it is an Islamic state. So I mean, even the immigration judge's analysis of these reports, I thought gave short shrift to the opposite side of the analysis and simply used the reports to support his decision that he didn't think that the conditions were bad enough for Mr. Harity and Sia. Furthermore, I mentioned that had Mr. Harity and Sia brought witnesses to a hearing, perhaps that would have bolstered that side of the State Department reports that clearly show a lot of chaos, clearly show a lot of conflict between Muslims and Christians, and suggest that, in fact, there is a case here. And
except, of course, as you know, general country conditions are normally not enough to justify a grant of withholding of removal. Lots of people would be coming to the United States from all over the place if that were true. And getting back to your procedural point, I think another thing that the immigration judge was, in fact, relying on, and I'd like your comment on this, is the fact that in Los Angeles he was represented by counsel. He obviously knew that that was a possibility. Because of that, he was advised by the immigration judge when the venue transfer motion was, you better start working on getting counsel in Chicago. Time goes by, and it doesn't happen. So at some point, the immigration judge here surely was entitled to bring the case on for a final.
Certainly, Your Honor. I agree with that. However, it's clear that Mr. Harity and Sia has always had counsel. He had counsel in Los Angeles. He had counsel before the BIA. He was looking for counsel. He said he didn't have an attorney yet. And so I agree that at some point the immigration judge would be allowed to say, well, you've had enough time. However, he needs to make sure.
Don't you think implicitly, though, that's what he was saying? I mean, he was looking at the full amount of time. And that, too, is a discretionary call, of course, whether we think 6 months would be better than four or some other disagreement might not be enough.
Part of the period of time in Los Angeles was another due process violation that led to reopening of the case.
So that's part of the time period. But not the time between the change of venue. I thought there was about a four-month period between when the decision is made in Los Angeles to send the case to Chicago and then that October master calendar hearing in Chicago.
The master calendar hearing, there was no interpreter.
Right, but I'm just talking about the time to find a lawyer to represent him in Chicago.
Your Honor,
Because by April, he's living in Chicago, which is why he asked the immigration judge in Los Angeles to send it here, right?
Yes. I agree that that may be a discretionary call. I don't recall that the immigration judge made a specific finding that he's had enough time.
No, he didn't. As I recall, he didn't say a word about it. I'm just sort of inferring from his actions.
In fact, the immigration judge didn't make clear. He said, well, you know, if you don't have an attorney, come anyway and we'll talk about it. And that could be interpreted as saying, well, you know, we'll talk about, you know, how you get a lawyer if you're unable to find one by the next hearing. So it's certainly ambiguous, and I don't think we need to, I think the immigration judge, if he's going to make that kind of discretionary call, has to nonetheless be clear in his direction and in his decision-making, especially when the issue at hand is delivering someone back to a country from which he's claiming that he fears, and the importance of having an attorney in these kind of proceedings. Just to go back to another point you raised about the whether this has been properly presented before the BIA, I see my time's up. So.
Can at least follow your thought through and conclude.
Your Honors, it was raised. It was raised before the BIA. The counsel issue was raised. It was not clear whether respondent waives his right to have an attorney present. That was stated in the brief. Now, is the lawyer required to make a full argument? I guess that's a call for you to make. But there's no question that the issue is before the BIA. The issue is in the brief. The other issue as well about whether the immigration judge did a proper job of carrying out his proceeding, and perhaps instructively, the BIA in its decision said, well, we have reviewed the record fully and we have found no improprieties or deficiencies. So if indeed the BIA would have looked at the record fully, you know, knowing very well as anybody the regulations, it's hard to believe that they would find no deficiencies or improprieties. Thank you, Your Honors.
Excuse me. Thank you. We'll hear now from Ms. Wong.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Sue Wong, and I represent the United States. The only issue that is properly before this Court is whether or not the immigration judge conducted the hearing properly and gave petitioner a full and fair hearing. And in this particular instance, the immigration judge did. The immigration judge asked at a minimum of 75 questions. He had not only leading questions, but he also had very open-ended questions. For example, in the record, page 92, he says, why did you decide to stay in the United States when you came here? That's an open-ended question.
But wait a minute. Before we get into that, first of all, the immigration judge, I'm sure, you know, we're all aware of the number of cases they handle, but he states inaccurately at the December 2004 hearing that he had informed Mr. Hrdiancia of his right to be represented by an attorney, and if he couldn't, that there were legal organizations. That's just not true. I mean, you look at the transcript, it's a mistake. You know, people make mistakes, but a mistake that may make a difference here. And the other thing I wanted to just comment on is, as Mr. Armbrecht just mentioned, the BIA order itself refers to its rejection of the arguments that there were procedural flaws in the proceeding before the IJ. It seems to me that's the best evidence imaginable that this matter was, in fact, before the BIA. The BIA heard about it, they thought about it, and they tell us what they have concluded about it. So in terms of preserving the right to argue about that particular point, which I think is his central point here, dealing, as I said, I'm sure with withholding of removal, It's up here. So then you get, you know, this fairly cursory exchange between the immigration judge and Mr. Hrdiancia. Yes, maybe some open-ended questions, but he zips right along. You know, I don't find 20 pages a particularly long transcript.
Well, Your Honor, to address your first concern, there apparently are two due process violation claims. One is that he didn't knowingly waive right to counsel, and the other one was whether or not the immigration judge conducted the hearing properly.
And he cites to the regulation, which is actually, you know, probably the place where we would begin anyway before we jumped all the way over to due process. And in Chicago, the immigration judge never tells him about this, and perhaps most importantly, never, as Part 3 of the regulation contemplates, never gives him the contact information for organizations that could help him.
Your Honor, what may not be in the record is that at the hearing, there, at any master calendar hearing, there's always paperwork in the immigration court that lists the legal aid services. It's always there, and unfortunately, the immigration judge did not put that on the record. But, that
but how do we know it got to Mr. Hurdy and Sia? We don't know, do we?
This is a petitioner who had attorney when he was in Los Angeles.
Fine, he but he doesn't mean he knows about the Chicago legal community. Where is there any information that the master calendar hearing, this information was given to Mr. Hurdy and Sia?
Your Honor, the as the court may be able to look at the record, it states that the immigration judge asked petitioner whether or not he has an attorney. He says, I had one, but it didn't work out. I'm looking for another one. So he's well aware that there are attorneys available. I mean, the
no,
issue
he,
of whether
that doesn't answer my question, which is where does the record show that he was given a list of the organizations in Chicago? Having some lawyer in Los Angeles isn't going to help him in Chicago.
In the notice to appear, Your Honor, in all the notice to appear at the bottom, it states that a list of free legal aid services has been provided to you. And unfortunately, the box on the bottom was not checked. But
well, which is some evidence that maybe it wasn't provided to
him. Well, Your Honor, the box for that particular notice, the notices are not checked as a regular course, but at the master calendar hearing, the paperwork's always right there in immigration court. And I
but
think that is
actually. How do we know? I mean, I understand what you're telling me about. You know, I'm sure those things are chaotic anyway. But you know that there's papers around. His English is, from at least the transcript of the master calendar hearing, is marginal. I just don't know where in the record. If the immigration judge had said what he thought he had said, and I do regard this as an honest mistake on the immigration judge's part, given the number of people involved, but. It would seem to be a very different case at that point.
Your Honor, but the bottom line is there was no prejudice here. Whether or not he had an attorney, it would not have allowed the petitioner to bring in any more information than he already gave at the hearing. He testified nothing happened to him. He only witnessed someone get shot in front of him, and he claimed that rocks were thrown at his house, and that was all the facts that he gave. And so he didn't make a proffer as to what else he would have presented or who would have testified on his behalf.
At what point would he have had the opportunity? I mean, I'm bothered by that as well, because I understand that he might have been confused before the IJ, but he's now been before the BIA, and his lawyer has now presented a brief here. So at what point do you think, for example, he could have done a proffer in his brief here without any basis in the record?
He could have done it at the BIA level when he appealed to board. He did have representation at that time, and there was nothing that was mentioned as to what other evidence he would have given. The only thing the attorney argued was that he should have been permitted to apply for asylum because of the one-year bar, and she argued legally wrong in any event. She didn't argue what else he would have proffered, what else he would have said. He candidly said nothing happened. And his parents, his siblings, they all continue to live in Indonesia with no incident. And so the immigration judge properly concluded that, one, even had the one-year bar did not apply, he would not have been eligible for asylum. And because the standard for withholding of removal is much higher than asylum, the immigration judge also found that he was not eligible for withholding and as well as CAT protection. So, Your Honor, even if, the immigration judge could have done a better job in advising him of his right to have an attorney. However, the bottom line is there was no prejudice here. He had a full and fair hearing, and there was nothing more he could have added to this case. Nothing happened to him, and that is the bottom line, and therefore there's no need for this case to be remanded whatsoever. If there are no further questions, the government rests.
Thank you, Ms. Wong. Does Mr. Ombrecht have some more time? Your time had expired, sir, so our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the morning, and therefore the court will stand in recess until the next scheduled oral argument.